Okay, welcome everybody. Today is March 27th, 2024, and we are together as the Denver Kehillah for our study, our Wednesday night classes, and we are going to be spending 3 weeks on Pesach. Now that the Purim is behind us, it's time to get ready for Pesach so it doesn't creep up on us. And we're going to spend 2 weeks on making sense of Magid. We're going to ask the same question for 2 weeks and give two the answers, approaches from two different great thinkers. And then we're going to skip 1 week. And then the last week before Pesach is going to be Pesach Cleaning Made Easy, where we go through, cleaning and preparing the house for Pesach in a way that does not, make us lose our mind. That's the goal. That's the goal for that. Okay, so let me share my screen and get started. All right, here we go. Making sense of Magid. So let me ask you, start with a question. If you were, picture yourself, you have the ability to write the Haggadah, right? The Haggadah is the guide that takes us through the Seder. And keep in mind that the goal of the Seder, or one of the goals of the Seder, is to tell the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Well, not only Yetziat Mitzrayim, tell the story of our enslavement in Egypt. And Yetziat Mitzrayim, how we got out and out of Egypt. So you need to pick a narrative to do that, right? And you have the whole corpus of Jewish literature at your fingertips. You could use anything you want. You can make it up. You can make up something new, right? What would you use? What would you choose as the centerpiece for Magid, right? As the centerpiece for making sure that using this guide will lead you towards telling the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. What would you use? Anyone want to take the opportunity to rewrite the Haggadah?
I mean, I would start with Shmot chapter 1.
Okay. Oh, chapter one, right, is a good place to start. That's where we find out and where would you end?
Well, that's an interesting question. Maybe after Shiraz Hayam, kind
Okay,
of
great.
end on a high note.
And on a high note, excellent. Okay, so beginning of Shemot and all the way through Shirat Hayam. Okay, great. And that would include everything, right? That would include the details of how the Jewish people slowly but surely became enslaved, how they got what the work was like, the makot that God brought to punish slash teach the Egyptians, who was in charge, how they got out of Mitzrayim, and of course the high note of marching through the sea. And coming out on the other side victorious and safe, right? That would be a very detailed account, the most detailed account actually that we have of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Okay, anyone else have another idea of what they would use to tell the story? All right, so Josh's idea, Josh's suggestion. Makes a lot of sense into the point where Rabbi Soloveitchik writes the same thing. So Baruch Shekivanta, Josh, Rabbi Soloveitchik says the following: If I had been entrusted with the task of writing the Haggadah, I would not have written any text at all. I would have merely instructed everyone to read the Chumash, right, the Torah, from Ve'ela Shemot B'nei Yisrael, the beginning of Shemot, until the conclusion of Parshat Bo. This portion of the Torah contains the full story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, of the Exodus from Egypt. It provides every detail, including the history, the background of each plague. It relates how the Jews came to Egypt and how they were oppressed and enslaved. It relates how Jews came to, it details their martyrdom, the torture to which they were exposed, Moshe's commission to rescue them, all of the plagues inflicted on their oppressors, and the miracles that occurred on the night of Pesach. But lo and behold, even though Josh and Rabbi Soloveitchik thinks that's what we should do, that is not what we do, right? We do not just make Kiddush and then instruct everyone, please open your Chumash to page 63, and we will now read 13 chapters of the book of Shemot, right? We do not do that. Rabbi Soloveitchik goes on, we do not practice this. Our Haggadah has eliminated just about every detail with the actual events leading up to Yetziat Mitzrayim. In fact, we say only a few words of the Exodus from Egypt. We merely recite a section of Arami Oved Avi, and that is in Devarim. Let's see what we do, what we do read. This section right here, let me just add the source numbers. Source number one serves as the centerpiece of Magid, as the centerpiece of the section of the Haggadah that we use to tell the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. And the truth is, it is only, we could argue, secondarily or tangentially related to Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Does anyone here know what this text is and what its primary purpose is? See, Ben, this is a good question for you to ask your Seder. It's a good stumper. Right? What is the primary purpose of this text? The primary purpose of this text is to be read by the Jewish farmer who brings their first fruits, their bikurim, their first crops, to Yerushalayim. Va'anita va'amarta lefnei Hashem. When you bring these crops to Israel, you're supposed to recite the following. We used to be in Egypt. We were there. They dealt harshly with us. They oppressed us. They imposed heavy labor on us. Right? That's the extent of the whole story of Egypt. Right? One sentence. And then another sentence that we cried out to God. He heard our plea and he took us out and then brought us here to the land of Israel. Right? So this primarily is a text about. It's a brief history of the Jewish people, very brief, again with very little detail of Yetziat Mitzrayim, right? That we were there, we were oppressed. This is like the they tried to kill us, we won, let's eat version of the Passover Seder, right? It's bare bones, very little detail, and again, its primary purpose is not even for the story of the telling of the story of our experience in Egypt. Its primary purpose is to be read by the farmer who's bringing Bikurim. Okay, so I put a couple of questions here. What about Shemot 1 to 13, as Josh noted? So I'll now ask another question. This is what becomes the centerpiece of the Maggid, of the center of the main section of the Haggadah, where we retell the story of our experience in Egypt and the exodus from Egypt. Why? Right? Why do you think the rabbis chose this over what seems to be the more sensible choice, which is Exodus 1 to 13? Anybody want to take a stab? Okay, Miriam, Ben.
This is going to require you to give some explanation or give some sort of talk. Like it doesn't tell the whole thing, right? Like they
Food for conversation.
it's yeah, food for conversation is what Miriam said.
Oh, interesting. So it's purpose. The rabbis chose a purposely, let's call it vague or detail or
Here,
end detail section in order to get people to start asking questions.
yeah. Because if it tells you everything, if it tells you the whole story, you've read the whole story, right? God's a good author. He did a good job, tells the story, and then
Right.
that's it. But here we have to explain.
But that is the purpose, though. The purpose of the night is to tell the story. So why not just use a better text? And you're saying because you want to use this text because since it is does lack detail, it will lead to people maybe paying attention and asking questions to fill in the detail. Okay, great answer. Okay,
So
Josh.
the children will ask.
And the children will ask. Right.
We get to make up stuff, you know, like the children ask, we make it up, we say it with a straight face so they believe us. It's good.
Okay, interesting.
I want to take it in a different direction, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Where's Moshe? There's no Moshe in these psukim.
There's barely motion in the Haggadah. In the Haggadah at all.
Right? If you substituted Shmot 1 through 13, it's Moshe, 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 right?
Right.
This is the total opposite approach. Like you said, Moshe barely appears. So what's the rationale or the philosophy for that choice?
Okay. So let's get back to that. But that is an interesting observation that by using this, we manage to somehow get the general contours of the story without Moshe. So maybe this was chosen specifically by Chazal, by the rabbis, so that we don't include Moshe, which then raises the question, why not? Okay, great. Okay, good. If there are no other suggestions as to the answer to this question, let's proceed to how Rabbi Soloveitchik looked at this, and then we could come back to Josh's point. So Rabbi Soloveitchik had a very specific idea about why this was chosen. This is source number four. This is from this appears in these ideas appear in more than one place, but I found them in a collection called Noraot HaRav, which is a collection of notes on shiurim on lectures that Rosh Soloveitchik gave. This one's obviously on Pesach, but he has on Purim and the high holidays, and they're really beautiful insights, which then later made themselves they later made their way into some of his like published works. And so Miriam and Ben, if you're looking for some new reading for Pesach, I would recommend this, Festivals of Freedom, Essays on Pesach and the Haggadah, available at your local online Amazon bookstore. So he says the following: this portion of the Torah contains, the section that Josh said is what he's talking about, contains the full story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, provides every detail. And as I said in section five, this is not the story of the Exodus. It is not even a synopsis of the Exodus. Why then did Chazal dictate that we simply recite the Parsha of Arami Oved Avi, which is the section that has to be read by the farmer bringing the first fruits, rather than relate the details of the events that culminated with the Exodus? So he's brief. I'm restating the question Rabbi Soloveitchik's words, and the answer is that it's true that Josh's suggestion and Rabbi Soloveitchik's suggestion of 1 through 13 would include almost every important element of Yetziat Mitzrayim, but it would be missing one really, really important element. And because it would be missing one important element, it was an unacceptable candidate for the Haggadah. And instead, Rabbi Soloveitchik is suggesting that a different text had to be used, even though that text is sparse on so many other details. Now, we make up for it, by the way, right? What do we do? And maybe this is why, right? In the Haggadah, we list the 10 plagues. In the Haggadah, we have these midrashim that talk about how many ways God whooped the Egyptians in the sea. It was 200, it was 250, right? Plagues with the yod, and that the multiplication of all the different plagues, and then we do Dayenu, right? We make up for the lack of detail in the Torah text chosen by adding other things into the Haggadah. But this was the Torah text that had to be chosen because it has something that is missing in the other Torah text. Anyone want to take a stab at what's missing there but present in the text before us?
The happy ending.
Which ending?
The milk and honey part.
Right, the Eretz Yisrael part. Because even Josh's expansive view that we should go from the beginning of Shemot until the end of Az Yashir, which makes sense, which is basically where Rabbi Soloveitchik also sort of led, put up as a straw man, it does not get us. I mean, to read, if we wanted to read, right, Psukim in the Torah that bring us from going down to Egypt towards Eretz Yisrael, that would be almost the rest of the Torah. Right, we could leave out Vayikra, but it would be almost the rest of the Torah. So what's missing is not only the entry into Eretz Yisrael, but also what is the nature, like how would you categorize this section of Devarim 26, 5 through 9? Right? What is the person doing? Right? This is a farmer. This is a script that a farmer, I guess when the farmer comes to Yerushalayim, he gives his first fruit to the Kohanim. The Kohanim say, here, take this laminated, piece of paper and read this. Right? What is it? What is the farmer expressing?
It's like a capsule of Jewish history pre-Mitzrayim to the moment in which he is, standing, basically.
Well, yes, first of all, it goes back to probably Abraham. That's the Arami Obed Avi reference. But there's also something else going on here. The whole text is a text of gratitude. Right? That's what's happening here. Look how far we've come. Our father was a fugitive Aramean. Then we were in Egypt. And in Egypt, all these terrible things happened. But look at me now. Look at me now. I'm here in Israel with my crop. And look how far God has taken us. He's taken us out of enslavement in Egypt. He's taken us with an outstretched arm across the sea with all of these wonders and these miracles. And he's brought us to this place, a land flowing with milk and honey. The whole thing is what we call in Hebrew, hoda'ah, thanks. The whole thing is a statement of thanks. And with that understanding, we could explain what Rabbi Soloveitchik is getting into. Before we get back to Rabbi Soloveitchik, let's look at the Sefer Achinuch. The Sefer Achinuch is a book written in the Middle Ages. We do not know the author. I think the scholarly accepted view is we do not know who the author is. There are some hints throughout the book who the author was, but no one has definitively declared who the author is. In the introduction, the author says that the book was written for the author's child and friends so that they don't spend their time on Shabbat afternoon, playing marbles and wasting their time. So I'm going to write this book that goes through all of the 613 mitzvot in the Torah. I'll briefly explain them, give you the source for them and the reason for them. And whenever I introduce this book, I also introduce it as the great guilt trip for the rest of us who did let our kids play marbles and, fitter away the day on Shabbat afternoon, and we did not write books for them instead. So if you were feeling inadequate as a parent, or if you were not feeling inadequate as a parent, now here's your chance. Okay, so here is what the Sefer HaChinuch says is the commandment for Bikurim. Lemikdash elu, that we are commanded when bringing the first fruits to the temple to recite these verses in the section. And he goes, my father was a wandering Aramean, and we read these verses. And what's the purpose of this mitzvah? It is from the root of this commandment, that it is since a man arouses his thoughts and draws the truth in his heart with the power of the words of his mouth, therefore, in that God did good to him, and in that he blessed him and his land to bear fruits, and he merited to bring the fruits to the house of our God, it is appropriate for him to arouse his heart with the words of his mouth and ponder that everything arrived to him from the master of the universe, and he recounts his kindness, may he be blessed. The whole purpose of this, what's called the Bikurim reading, right, is in order for the farmer to express thanks, right? Is or in order for the farmer to express gratitude. And that's the connection, I think, between, Rabbi Soloveitchik argues, is between the Bikurim and retelling the story of the and retelling the story of the Exodus. Sorry about that. Oops. Okay. In the Maggid section, we say the following: Lefichach anachnu chayavim lahodot lahalel lishabeach lefaer. Right? It's explicit in the Haggadah that we're doing more than telling the story, right? When we are also thanking God, right? Thank, praise, laud, glorify, exalt, lavish, bless, raise high, and acclaim He who made all these miracles. And then we read Hallel, right? Hallel is an obligatory part of the Seder because Hallel is about thanksgiving. And so Rabbi Soloveitchik is suggesting that this is the perfect element for Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, because first of all, Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim really only ends in Eretz Yisrael, and that section of Devarim, as Miriam said, gets us to that happy ending of getting to the land flowing with milk and honey. And we cannot talk about getting to Eretz Yisrael without explaining how that happened. That's Yetziat Mitzrayim. And we cannot talk about Yetziat Mitzrayim without talking about getting to Eretz Yisrael, because that's the ultimate goal of Yetziat Mitzrayim to begin with. So there is no other choice of text to use. This is the text that combines three elements: Yetziat Mitzrayim, Eretz Yisrael, and Hoda'ah, and thanking God for getting us out of Mitzrayim and into Eretz Yisrael. And so that's why the text had to be used. So the Megillah is sort of by when the rabbis chose that text, they're embedding in it a very important idea, a very important lesson. And that is that you cannot talk about Yetziat Mitzrayim without talking about getting to Eretz Yisrael. You cannot talk about Eretz Yisrael without talking about Yetziat Mitzrayim. And they both have to be punctuated with Hoda'ah, as we see in the text of the Haggadah here. Therefore, after this is at the end of Maggid, right before Hallel, after we've read all of the stuff, right, then we have to start, then we have to say Hallel. We split Hallel in half. We have Hallel, half of Hallel over the second cup, and half of Hallel later at the fourth cup. But the beginning of Hallel, where we offer praise to Hashem and thanks to Hashem, is on the second cup, part of the Maggid section. So Maggid now is redefined for us. Maggid is not just telling us the story of leaving Egypt. It's telling the story of leaving Egypt, getting to Eretz Yisrael, which also we have in Dayenu, by the way, and this important element of Hoda'ah, right? Because it makes sense, right? So what if you tell the story? Okay, so now you've told the story, but if you don't tell the story and attach a religious meaning to it, which is I'm grateful for this, then what power and strength does the story really have? And then just to as the kicker, right, we drink four cups of wine at the Seder, which are supposed to remind us of four different languages of redemption, right? We have Vilakachti, this one here, and then I will take you to be my people. Oh, I skipped them. Vhotzeiti, Vitzalti, Vigaalti, Vilakachti. This is the fourth one, but there is a fifth one, Vehevaiti, right? Vehevaiti etchem el haaretz. Let me go back here and just go to all the verses. Sorry about that. Can you see the new screen? Here they are, in verse 6. Vehotzeiti etchem mitachat tzevaot Mitzrayim. I will bring you out. Vehitzalti, I will deliver you. Vegaalti, and I will redeem you. Vilakachti, and I will take you to be my people. Those are the four languages which correspond to each cup of wine. And then finally, Vehevaiti etchem el haaretz. I will bring you to the land. That's why, by the way, in some traditions, there's a fifth cup of wine at the Seder, precisely for this fifth sort of language that's left out. So we see that we have both elements here. We have the element of Hoda'ah in this Lefikach section, and right after the last language of the four, we have a fifth of Vehevaiti. And so this is Rabbi Soloveitchik's conclusion. Thus, when offering Bikurim, the first fruits, one must also tell the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim through Arami Obed Avi, those verses from Deuteronomy, from Devarim. The Torah has burdened the person who brings the Bikurim with the obligation to express his thanks not only for the gift of the land, but for the Exodus as well, since the Exodus was the prologue or the introduction to the acquisition of the land. The acquisition of the land would not have occurred without the Exodus. The Jews would never have obtained the land of Israel. The bringer of the first fruits was burdened with the mitzvah to express thanks, first for the gift of land bestowed upon us, and second for the Exodus from Egypt. Similarly, when thanking God for Yitzhak Mitzrayim, one must associate it, connect it, and link it up with the gift of the land, since that was the ultimate goal of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. The obligation to thank God on the night of Pesach and by bringing the Bikurim are equated. So those are, they're thematically equated because they are connected. It's the same project. Yitzhak Mitzrayim, getting to Eretz Yisrael, is the same project. We'll just add one other note here, in terms of how we tell the story. Right? Rabbi Soloveitchik says the Torah was concerned not so much with our telling the story of the Exodus as in studying the story of the Exodus. But Soloveitchik makes this point in lots of different places that we're not telling the story, we're studying the story. And for Rabbi Soloveitchik, studying Torah is about finding generational and everlasting lessons, right? We study Torah to teach us truths about our life. And he explains it here. There is a difference between narrating a story and studying a story. One can narrate an event without studying it. Similarly, one may study an event without narrating it. The difference is the principle is in the principle, the universal motifs and eternal meaning of the story. A narration is limited to the tale of events that lie in the past. In contrast, the study is concerned with discerning the meaningfulness and the significance of those events. So Rabbi Soloveitchik is pointing out that We're not so interested in every detail of every plague and everything that God did from a historical perspective, right? And Rabbi Soloveitchik says elsewhere that the Torah is not a history book, right? We're interested in the what does he call them? The universal motifs and eternal meaning of the story. That's what we're looking for on the night of Yetziat Mitzrayim. We're not looking just to tell a story, and we have to add thanks, and we also are looking for other meaning, eternal meaning. So we can't get bogged down in reading 13 chapters, right, of the, because then we're not going to be able to focus, maybe going back to what Miriam Ben said, on asking questions about this text. What is this text teaching me? Right, so maybe we're specifically vague so that someone could say, oh, here's what this text is teaching you. Arami Oved Avi, that's why, right, we have this notion in the Haggadah, we're supposed to start with a low point and end with a high point. These are all of the eternal elements of eternal meaning that we find in the Haggadah of in the Haggadah Shel Pesach. So Rabbi Soloveitchik, I'm sorry, Miriam Ben, go ahead.
It's kind of like an educational philosophy. So, ideally, as a teacher, you want to do authentic education where you're like applying knowledge in a real world situation. So, as opposed to like rote memorization of like historical facts, trying to apply something in a real world way, that we're kind of applying this to our current lives by analyzing it through questioning.
Right, exactly. I think that's exactly what's going on here. And you'll note that the way we study this chapter, these five verses from Devarim, is very interesting, right? For example, we at the beginning of the section, we read all the verses, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Right? It's wild, right? The whole story is in four verses, five verses, right? But then, if you recall, we then analyze them through drashot, right? We take a phrase, like for example, here in source number 13, Vayehi Sham Lagoy, God made us a nation in Egypt. This is from Devarim. This is from the section that the farmer brings. And then we add our own meaning, Milamed Shehayu Yisrael Mitsuyanim Sham. This teaches that we became distinguishable there, meaning we kept our identity. That's a universal, eternal message that we're learning, that while in exile, we have to try to maintain, just like they did in Egypt, our unique identity. Gadol Atzum, that they became great and powerful. And then we use another verse from Exodus to tell us that Bnei Yisrael were prolific, and very fruitful in the land of Mitzrayim, despite being under oppression. So what we do is we teach eternal lessons by taking apart the verses that the farmer said, and by also using other verses in the Torah to explain them. So it's like this is there's a specific word for this. I forgot what it's called, but we're basically using one verse in the Torah to explain another verse in the Torah. That's one type of drasha, and we also use more classic drasha styles. So virav, numerous, as it says, tavoi, and we have this goes on and on. This is the longest, really main section of the Haggadah, where we eke out lessons and use verses from Shemot to explain verses in Devarim. So in just to review, the main idea is Rabbi Soloveitchik sets up this straw man. Like, what are we reading here? It just seems like a bad choice. But if we From Rabbi Soloveitchik's perspective, it's the only option, because we have to connect leaving Egypt to getting into Israel, and we need an element of Thanksgiving. This is the perfect thing, the perfect use of the perfect choice of a verse, and it allows us to do all things. And then some of the details that are missing, which Rabbi Soloveitchik frankly thinks are less important, we manage to add back in through other elements added to the Haggadah. And just to get back to Josh's question, so Moshe is out of the Haggadah. Maybe again, it's a great suggestion, but maybe that's another reason why this was chosen, because one of the eternal messages we're trying to talk about in this section is faith, and that God is in charge. And we have a similar idea. It's interesting, coming off of Purim, where God's name is absent from the Megillah. So there, it's a focus on human activity, and here it's a focus on divine activity. So maybe we're getting closer to some sort of balance of what it should be. But I mentioned this past Shabbat that Rabbi Soloveitchik uses both Pesach and Purim as an example of this theological idea that whenever salvation comes to Bnei Yisrael, it's through a human Moshiach, it's through a human savior. And in Purim, it was Esther and Mordechai, and in Pesach, it was Moshe. Nevertheless, it's different because Moshe is really totally absent from the story here. And in part of the Haggadah, right, it says, Ani v'lo malach, ani v'lo shaliach, ani hu v'lo acher, right? I, meaning God, am not an angel. God, and not a messenger. It is me and nobody else. So maybe that's why this section is chosen also, because there's so much focus on only God, and no focus at all on any human activity. Good. So maybe it's like you said, a purposeful choice for that reason as well. So that's Rabbi Soloveitchik on why this odd choice for Magid. Next week we're going to look at the answer of Rabbi Yitzchak Huttner in his Pachad Yitzchak, a very different approach as to why this is chosen. And then we'll skip a week, as I mentioned, and the week after that we will do Pesach cleaning made easy. So I'll open it up one last time for final comments or thoughts, and then we'll say Laila Tov.
Yeah, one final comment. So much of the Seder ritual is about trying to imagine ourselves as if we were there, right? As if we personally experience Yetziat Mitzrayim, and we, eat the maror, and we eat the charoset, and we, do all these things. And it occurred to me as you were going through the source sheet and trying to help us understand why this text is here, that in a way it's also fulfilling that function, right? It's once you know the context of, where these words were said and why they were recited, it's almost as if we're putting ourselves right in Yerushalayim at the Beit HaMikdash in the position of someone who's about to bring a korban,
Right.
right? And to cultivate that attitude of thankfulness for having, gone through those periods of Jewish history, and now we're going to express our gratitude, through a korban. We can't do that obviously now, but again, it's about trying to imagine ourselves in a place and time.
Yes, and in fact, if you look at the text, this farmer who could have been living hundreds of years after Yitzhak Mitzrayim says, V'yotzi'enu, and you took us out of Egypt, right? And
Right.
this could have happened, decades or even more years after, right? This was going on for the hundreds of years that the Beit HaMikdash stood. So it's not only that we see that, right? The farmer also was supposedly experiencing that. And in the same essay, Rabbi Soloveitchik notes that, well, he says two beautiful things I'll just end with. He says that that when it comes, we do this also on Tisha B'Av, we try to sort of relive the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. The premise is that we identify fully with the past. This is one of these eternal lessons, right? What's the whole point of putting yourself, what does it mean to see yourself as if you left Egypt? And so for Rabbi Soloveitchik, it's about identifying fully with the past and with generations that vanished and disappeared from the historical arena thousands of years ago. Identification with the past must be complete. So it's an attempt to really stay connected to the past and not sort of write off the past as meaningless, as that was then, this is now, right? That's obviously not what we do as Jews. We're very connected to the past. No human being is as close to his past as the Jew is. This is exemplified by the attachment of the Jew to Eretz Yisrael, in which he was exiled for over 1900 years. His attachment is so strong, so dynamic, that even nowadays there's an impact on the reconstruction of the land. And finally, also, this is, he also notes this, that there's also a symbolic slavery and a symbolic exodus. As a matter of fact, the Kabbalists interpret the exodus from Egypt not only in historical terms, but also in symbolic terms. They explain that each individual goes through slavery. Each individual is a slave serving many masters. Sometimes one is a slave to oneself, to one's own self-love, to one's own selfishness, and to one's own narrow-mindedness, to one's own ignorance, and to one's own arrogance. There is also a process of freedom through which one goes, God helps one attain freedom. So there's also the opportunity to interpret the story of Egypt not only historically, but also to really internalize it more about freeing ourselves from, I guess, what he calls like emotionally bad habits or things along those lines. Okay, well, thank you very much, everyone. I appreciate you joining, and I hope to see you next Wednesday at the same time, if not before. And thanks again. Have a good night.
All right, great class. Good night. Thank you.
Everyone.